This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Darcy Green's debut novel, After the Siren, reimagines the AFL as a world filled with queer players, friendship and romance. And it lands at the perfect moment too. Just yesterday, Mitch Brown made history as the first AFL gay player, to come out as bisexual. Well, Darcy's book takes that spirit even further, imagining a league where players can be fully themselves, where love plays out just as dramatically as the footy. Darcy, welcome to Drive.
Thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
For those who haven't picked it up yet, because it's available on September the 23rd, how would you describe After the Siren?
Well, it's a romantic comedy about two AFL players who have some history, who unexpectedly become teammates and then discover that maybe they don't dislike one another after all.
Now, the opening chapter, it's such a gut punch. Theo reliving that infamous missed goal and panic attack after the siren. Why did you want to start his story in that moment of, confusion?
I think it's such a profound moment to watch as a fan. I suppose the idea of a kick after the siren, and I feel like it's the moment where sort of legends are made. You know, you always remember a kick after the siren. And I can remember, and I now can't quite remember which game or which player, but I can remember watching a player miss a goal after the siren and looking at their face. And I thought, wow, what an incredibly awful experience to have to go through, really. And it's like, it's such a private moment in some ways of, you know, this personal feeling of making a mistake or failing, but you're playing that out in front of 80,000 people possibly. So I was really interested in that moment and what that would be like. And from that, the character of Theo sort of started to come into my mind.
But then you throw him into the same team and even the same room as Jake, who once mocked him on a footy show. Where did that, I suppose, enemies forced together spark come from? Because I feel like I can think of several footy show hosts and players I would love to see in the room together.
I think it's because a dynamic that I really enjoy exploring in fiction is between two people who perhaps on the surface seem quite different or who rub one another the wrong way, because I think sometimes you encounter someone who seems to magnify back to you your own insecurities or things that you're worried about, and you think, oh, just can't stand that person for whatever reason. And often it says more about what you're worried about. But I think also what I find really interesting is when underlying that, I suppose, surface level animosity or antagonism is actually shared values or shared perspective. And I'm really interested in the process of people who might get off on the wrong foot realizing that they have more in common, or also that they may have really fundamentally misunderstood what the other person is like, because for lots of us, what we seem like is not necessarily the same as what we're like once you get to know us.
And if we look at, I suppose, finding that common sort of territory between the two people. You look at the banter between Theo and Jake in the book. I mean, it's sharp, it's funny, it's flirtatious as well. How did you get that chemistry to happen? Was that difficult?
I mean, I suppose in some ways, no. I actually find dialogue one of the most fun things to write, and it's something that comes relatively easily to me when I'm in the process of writing. If I can't write dialogue between two characters, then something is not working in the story, because often that's where I start. The first idea I'll have for a scene is the conversation and the dialogue, and it builds out around that. So I actually had a lot of fun writing the dialogue, especially, to be honest, Jake's dialogue, because Jake is nothing like me, and putting myself into that kind
of
character
was
very fun. Strangely, it wasn't. I think I actually really struggled with Jake's character for a while, and then there was a little bit of a flick of the switch moment where I think Jake just asserted control over the narrative and me, and informed me that a number of things I planned weren't going to work. But from that moment on, I just had a very clear sense of his character and what he was going to be like.
We're chatting in the studio with author Darcy Green about their debut novel, After the Siren, which is a queer sports romance set in a very different version of the AFL. I suppose, Darcy, beyond the romance, the book also feels like a love letter to queer friendships as well. Would you agree?
Yes. And that was something that was actually really important to me because I read a lot of queer romance and a lot of sports romance. And something that I've noticed is often, and I think this is partly because of the stories that are being told, but often they show people who don't have a lot of community around them, often because as sports people, they haven't been able to come out, whether publicly or to people in their lives. And I understand writing those stories, but I wanted to write something that also showed the power of queer friendship and community, because I think that for a lot of people, that's where the strength to take a lot of steps in your life in terms of coming to terms with your own queerness and then who you're comfortable being out with. I find it difficult to imagine being queer without wanting to seek out that type of friendship and community. And so it was really important to me that both the characters, that was built into the book. And an aspect, I think, for both the characters is as they find community that helps them to be more comfortable being themselves.
Now, you've got a bit of a connection to AFL, haven't you?
I do.
Tell us about that.
Well, I've always been a massive footy fan. I was obsessed when I was a kid. And then during my teens, I fell out of love with all sport. In fact, not liking sport was a very important part of my personality through my teen years. Teenage Darcy would be probably horrified by the amount of sport that's now in my life, they're judging. But then in my mid-20s, I actually started playing AFL at a very low level in Sydney for the Newtown Breakaways, which was a really lovely experience. But also during that time, I came out as queer. And so for me, that environment was such an affirming one. In fact, I say I came out. I didn't have to come out at footy because everyone had assumed that I was queer. So
because when you played footy?
Not so much. It was a very queer group. I would say that maybe 90, 95% of the team was queer. And because of my overall vibe, they correctly, as it transpired, deduced that I was queer. It wasn't, no one ever said that to me to sort of make me label myself, but it was more that it was a very queer group and everyone just assumed, and it was quite nice because when I had that internal realization, I didn't have to come out at footy because I'd never gone back in, so to speak. So that was such it was such an affirming experience. And I think that meant that sometimes when I was watching men's AFL, the difference between those two contexts was so stark.
How much easier did it make it for you to be in a team that was with other queer women?
I think it was really great. I think, you know, something that gets said in the book at one point is you have to see it to be it. And I believe that to varying degrees. But I think for me at least, that was the first time that I was around a big group of queer people, and particularly queer women and non-binary people. And for me, it was this moment of suddenly seeing these ways of being that I hadn't been exposed to before. And I think for me, that really set in motion a chain of suddenly realizing, oh, maybe this is what I'm like. Also, I just had the most catastrophic crush on one of my teammates. And like there comes a point where you have to accept that you're not just admiring someone's football, has gone beyond that. So that sort of forced the epiphany.
When you look at, I suppose, your experience in a different level of AFL, but, you know, your experience, and then you look at, yesterday's announcement with Mitch Brown coming out as bisexual, do you think even though you were in a team of queer people and we've got one person making that brave statement, do you think that does sort of slowly open up the football world to being more acceptable to other people coming out? And does it make it a little bit easier for the next person?
I hope so. And I'm going to try and talk about this without getting emotional because I keep getting choked up when I talk about it, because I think it's in some ways such a huge step, because in 129 years of men's AFL, there's never been an out queer player. And so I think, and Mitch spoke about this himself, he sort of talked about the fact that he doesn't have to run out on the G, you know, in front of 80,000 people, et cetera, and deal with it in the moment of his playing career. But I think that even having someone come out and speak about those experiences, I think is a massive step forward. And I think it perhaps most importantly really focuses on some of the systemic issues that might stop people from feeling comfortable. And I suppose we'll see how it goes. But I really hope that him talking so bravely about his experiences will provide some impetus for systemic change. In addition to just being so genuinely exciting, I lost a lot of productive work time yesterday.
Do you think it, the AFL should read your, you know, the people at the AFL should read your novel and maybe think, you know, this is the world that we need to encourage?
Look, I think they'd probably dismiss it as wildly aspirational and unrealistic. And it was funny writing it because in some ways it is, it's not the AFL that you see. And I mean, it's pretty close, especially at the beginning of the book, at the beginning of the book, there aren't any out players, which now I'm wrong about. Trajectory has now
changed.
Which
is good.
Which is excellent, yeah. But I think for me, I think what a sports romance does for a lot of fans is it lets you inhabit this space you love, but in a way where everything is a little bit better and kinder and more rainbow than it might be realistically. So I don't know.
We can always have stretch targets.
Yeah, this is very, yeah. That's very true. I mean, like you should make it like this.
We're chatting with author Darcy Green about their debut novel, And After the Siren. It's a queer sports romance set in a very different version of the AFL, which we've been speaking about. Now, romance as a genre, it's always been powerful for queer readers. How did romance novels, I suppose, shape your own journey and, you know, with gender and sexuality?
So they had a huge impact. And I say this as someone who came out as queer when I was 26 or 27, and then came out as non-binary only a couple of years ago. And I think I was always drawn to queer stories, even during times of my life where I was very determinedly not thinking anything queer at all.
It's funny how the universe works.
It really is. But I think reading those narratives can be really powerful in just exposing you to ideas and ways of being that you hadn't seen examples of. And I can actually remember, for example, reading a romance which had an asexual character in it and connecting so strongly with that character. But it was the first time I'd read about that experience being put on the page in that way. And so I think queer romance can be a place where people sort of encounter these stories about, and they're very personal stories. And I feel like you can read information and you can access great resources, but sometimes what you need that to really give you something to think about is reading the experience of someone and thinking, oh, the way that they've described that sounds so much like how I feel.
What about the power of queer romance in, I suppose, facilitating change for non-queer readers?
Oh, look, I like to think that, I think fundamentally reading is about empathy a lot of the time. And so I would hope that people who aren't queer and who read the book really enjoy it, but also maybe it makes them think about something a little bit differently.
I agree. Now, finally, no spoilers, but readers will walk away from this book a little hot under the Guernsey, shall we say?
That's probably true. Yes.
What do you hope stays with them once they've turned the last page?
A feeling of joy. That's why I wrote it, and that's what I was looking for and what I needed when I wrote it. So I really hope that people have a good time. It's fundamentally, I hope, a fun book. And so I want people to finish it with a smile and to have had a good time.
Darcy, thank you so much for joining us today in the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
After the Sun, it's published in Australia, available on September the 23rd. You can pre-order it now and then grab your copy and get swept up in the romance. Darcy, great to chat with you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.